Does the COVID-19 epidemic about to become the COVID-19 season, much like the flu? And if so, how much more challenging than the flu do the various variants make the job for medical science? Is the truth, I mean the actual truth about COVID, finally sinking in with more people so any future outbreak might be not as widespread? Those are just a few of the questions people have. Joining us now to explore some of the answers is an infectious disease epidemiologist with Harvard's Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs, as well as with the New York City Hospital System. She was also featured on the Netflix docuseries Pandemic, How to Prevent an Outbreak. We say good day to Dr. Saira Madad. How are you today, Doctor?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me on.
I appreciate you to come on board, because even after all this time, there's still confusion, uncertainty. Some are still, I guess, enamored with conspiracies and fake information. But when you look at the fact now that America's crossed that 1 million COVID death threshold, and we're seeing another surge of cases here in the Northeast, New Jersey in particular, I guess there must be something to take to heart when we see, sure, the number of cases are increasing, but we're also at the same time, for the most part, seeing a drop in hospitalizations.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think it's really important to frame it in two ways. First, the pandemic is not over, and we're seeing that with the rise in cases. But at the same time, we're in a much better position than we were, let's just say, March 2020, when we were only relying on non-pharmaceutical interventions like physical distancing and masking because we didn't have vaccinations or good therapeutics. And that's not the case now. We actually have both. We have vaccinations, and we have really great therapeutics. And so now when we look at where are we and what can we do to protect ourselves? The number one solution is, if you're not vaccinated, you should get vaccinated. You should be up to date with your vaccinations, because what does that do, right? So the question is, well, what does a vaccine do for me? Well, it helps protect you against the most severe outcomes, meaning prevents you from requiring hospitalizations, potentially ICU-level care, or even dying. And if you're looking at just the data, you're seeing that in New York City, by and large, many of the people that are dying are those that are unvaccinated. So vaccines are still holding up very well. They have taken a hit in terms of infection. And what does that mean? That means that how likely are you to actually catch the virus and develop symptoms? And there's a much higher likelihood. There's more breakthrough cases in the sense of vaccinating people getting exposed because there's more virus in the community and becoming symptomatic. But at least it's protecting you from going into the hospital, from really suffering from, you know, significant chest pain, shortness of breath, and the like. And so then the question is, okay, if I do get infected, and for example, if I'm vaccinated or unvaccinated, what tools do we have? And now we have Paxlovid, and we have other antiviral treatments. And when we talk about just Paxlovid, it is, you know, a medication that you take, for example, and it decreases your risk of hospitalization by 90%. So on both ends, vaccinations and therapeutics, we're in a much better state. And so what I tell people now is, with cases going up, with more virus in the community, it's just being smart about the activities that we do to protect ourselves and those around us. No one wants to get sick, right? I don't want to get sick. I don't even want to have nasal drainage. I mean, it's an inconvenience to me. I don't want to miss work. I love what I do. I'm sure others obviously enjoy what they do as well. You know, being ill is not a walk in the park. So what can I do to protect myself? And that's where I continue to wear masks in indoor spaces, in mixed gatherings, and the like.
And certainly if you do traveling, some places it's still mandated, like mass transportation in localities, even though it's a coin toss now where airline policy is going to wind up landing, but be that as it may. I'm asking this as a layperson who over time has talked to a lot of scientists, reads about science, so I hope this question makes sense. The flu virus every year is a variant, and they prepare a vaccine in anticipation of what that variant is going to be, hope for the best success, usually lands somewhere between 70%, give or take. Is COVID-19 simply a virus that develops variants more frequently than a flu virus?
Yeah, so the flu virus has multiple different strains, and as we look at developing a flu vaccine, it's very much hit or miss, because a lot of what happens from a public health perspective is they decide on what strains would be most commonly circulating in the Northern Hemisphere, based on what's happening in the Southern Hemisphere, about, I would say, 4 to 5, anywhere from 6 months ahead of time. And if that changes, then developing or updating a vaccine is just really not possible, because it takes at least 3 to 4 months to develop a vaccine, in that sense, for a flu vaccine. And so when we look at COVID-19, you know, the reason why we're seeing so many variants and subvariants pop up is because we have so much community transmission. So many people here in the U.S. and around the world continue to get infected. And the more opportunities this virus has to infect people, the more opportunities it has to mutate. That's just really a simple bare bones right there, then and there. And so when it has more opportunities to replicate and multiply, then you'll have higher levels of mutation, and it can give rise to these variants that you're seeing, BA1, BA2, all the sub-lineages of BA1, of BA4, BA5, things like that. And so this is going to happen continuously. And so the question now is, what can we do to prevent that from happening? And as simple as a solution may be, the case is we need to vaccinate more people. We need to control transmission levels here in the United States and globally. And that's why it's so important that we fund global health vaccination campaigns. And if you are following up on what's happening at the congressional and federal level, Congress has not authorized enough funding to prepare us, not just here in the United States, but to ensure that globally we can vaccinate more people around the world. Because selfishly, that's going to help us as well. It's not only the right thing to do from a humanitarian perspective, it's also selfishly making sure that we're protected and that we don't see more variants pop up around the world. When we talk about our vaccines right now are holding up very well against, you know, the most severe outcomes. But this is where we need, second-generation vaccines that can hold up even better. So taking, for example, when we talk about flu vaccines, they could be multivalent. They take out a bunch of different strains that are circulating and they put into one vaccine for flu. Right now for COVID, our current COVID vaccines are based on the original, strain of SARS-CoV-2 that came out of China, back in 2019, 2020. And so now what these pharmaceutical companies are doing is they're developing bivalent, for example, looking at Omicron and their sublineages and including that in the vaccine so we have better protection. And so what we need is funding. We need more funding and more resources to support that. And that's where I would just encourage your viewers just to, you know, pick up the phone and call your elected official and say, hey, we need to provide funding both for domestic COVID-19 preparedness as well as globally.
Certainly, because you want every developed nation at least to be on the same page so that there is not one weak link in the chain. We're wrapping up our time with Dr. Syra Madad, who is an infectious disease epidemiologist at Harvard's Belford Center for Science and International Affairs. You can follow her, by the way, at Syra Madad, SYRAMADAD, on Twitter. And we've linked over to her Twitter feed on our page as well. You're listening to Issues and Ideas. Looking forward, is there a concern that there's a significant number of people who either contract COVID, have contracted COVID, and just because they're imagining the symptoms to be extreme worthy of hospitalization, it wasn't, so they don't think it's COVID. Does that create a situation, too, where unknowingly a spreading of the virus can take place?
Absolutely. I mean, asymptomatic infections certainly, exist, and they probably make up the majority of many of the cases that are circulating. And that's where I think it's important that, you know, we continue to apply this layered mitigation approach that if you're going into a high-risk setting, and so the question is, what is a high-risk setting? You're going into a large gathering of people that you may not know their vaccination status or if they've tested ahead of time to wear a mask. So that's going to prevent you from getting exposed, right? So you can't pass a virus that you don't have yourself, right? So if you are asymptomatic, then obviously you have the virus, you've been exposed to the virus. So the question is, how can I prevent myself from getting even exposed to the virus so I don't pass it on to others? So just layering all those mitigation measures and seeing what activities are doing, and then based on that activity, should I wear a mask? Should I make sure that this event can take place outside because community transmission levels are really high in my community right now? And so just thinking through and planning some of that would just go a long way.
Well, we're certainly a long way from where we were just 2 years ago. There's still the need for precaution and caution, not fear, not worry, not stress.
Yes.
It's a matter of education, who your source is, certainly your personal physician is your first go-to, and certainly listen to a doctor before you start listening or have been listening to an NFL quarterback or a podcaster, for example. I don't want to name names or anything, but it's the quality of the information, the knowledge behind that information that is going to be your best education. And also a great resource, too, is Dr. Madad's Twitter feed, because she'll keep you up to date, too, with the hows, the whys, the current events, and looking ahead as well as far as COVID and other medical issues are concerned. We've linked to her Twitter feed over at our homepage. We've been joined with infectious disease epidemiologist at Harvard Belfort Center for Science and International Affairs, Dr. Sarah Madad. Doctor, thanks so much for the true education and information that you shared here today.
Thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it.